Good morning and welcome to the show. I'm John Levin. I'm the commander of the Counter-Narcotics Alliance and a captain with the Tucson Police Department. I've been a regular on the show in the past, and Sherry agreed to give me the opportunity to have the hour today to be able to talk about some things that are really important, I think, to our community and to the safety of children and others. And so the reason we wanted the hour today was to talk about a pending initiative that's likely to be on the ballot for the city of Tucson. There's a ballot initiative that is titled, or will be titled when it's finally filed in the end, Tucson Families Free and Together. And people in the community have been talking to me, particularly in the federal law enforcement community and elsewhere, about this initiative because of some of the language that's buried deep inside of it. And so I've had the opportunity to read it. The city of Tucson employees are really not allowed to comment on whether or not they would vote for or ask people to vote against something. So what we can do and what I want to do, and I brought some guests here to talk about it, is what effect this might have on our ability to do law enforcement and to protect the people in the city of Tucson. The title's a great title, Tucson Families Free and Together. And ostensibly, if you ask a petition passer, which I did, what does it mean? And in the fine print, it says, by the way, you can read the entire petition and full text of the initiative if you'd like. It's attached to the petition. The passer should give you the opportunity to look at that. But if you read that, and it's four pages, and it's in legalese, and it's difficult to read, I think, even if you're experienced at doing this kind of thing, there's a section in there that really makes it impossible for local law enforcement to work at all with our federal partners. And you know, I imagine that would be litigated if this were to be successful. But I think before we get to the point whether or not it's litigated or passes or gets on the ballot, I think what's the most important thing to do is go backwards and talk about why do we have relationships with federal partners and what do they bring to the table. And I don't think most people understand that, even police officers. I mean, throughout our own agency, you know, we've got 800-900 cops, and I don't know that a lot of them work daily with federal partners like some areas do. And, of course, I've talked in the past. I'm with Counter Narcotics Alliance. We are a federal local task force, and we do narcotics enforcement. Right now we're in the middle of the biggest overdose threat in recent memory, certainly within my lifetime, with the opioid epidemic and what's going on with methamphetamine. And we work every day. I work literally feet away from federal partners in a very efficient and effective manner to address the threats that we face. That's all threatened, and I think people would probably understand that first. But I think the deep issue here has to do with all the areas that people don't know. So I have a couple of experts and sergeants that work every day with these issues in their units that maybe people aren't aware of. Sergeant Freak, could you start and introduce yourself? Tell us about yourself, and then we'll go on from there.
Sure. My name's Ben Free. I'm a supervisor with the Tucson Police Department's Street Crime Interdiction Unit, which in a lot of ways shares some similarities with what would be considered a vice unit. So, you know, part of what we do involves your typical licensing things involving, you know, liquor licensing. Beyond that, though, we move into some of the prostitution-related issues, but particularly where it spins into more of the federal relationships is when we conduct investigations into human trafficking. And it's the primary unit that looks into that kind of thing. So that's what my unit does. We work closely with the FBI and Homeland Security to conduct those investigations.
That's great. And, you know, we'll get maybe deeper into that. I don't know that everyone understands what human trafficking is. I think it's an opportunity maybe to talk some about that. We've done full shows on human trafficking here before on this show, and they've been very interesting, and I think they've been enlightening for everybody. Sergeant, tell us who you are and what you do, and we'll go from there.
Thanks for having me. My name is Jacques Spronkin. I'm a sergeant with the Tucson Police Department. I'm currently the supervisor for the SORT unit. So we supervise the sexual offender registration for the city of Tucson. Other responsibilities that fall under that unit are missing and abducted children. So anytime we have a missing and abducted child, our unit will deal with that. And then lastly, we also do the internet crimes against children. So any sort of sexual exploitation of a minor that is internet related, to include child pornography or any sort of luring, we deal with that as well and try to combat that.
So that's interesting. I don't think most people understand the relationship between child sex crimes investigations and the federal government. Can you share a little bit about why that happens, and to what extent do we work with them?
Yeah, sure. I mean, everyone knows the internet is not just a local thing. It's worldwide. In fact, we were working on something last night where our main suspect was sharing images with someone in Europe, just to give you an idea. So obviously that is far outside of the Tucson jurisdiction. So we need our federal partners to help out with that. And furthermore, when you start getting into the weeds of these internet crimes, they are vast. And the amount of forensic support and analytical support necessary to do this would be virtually impossible without our partners in the FBI, Homeland Security, and others. When I was just on a warrant this week, we had a member from the ATF, the Secret Service, and Homeland Security with us, as well as a forensic expert from the FBI, and that was just this week. So whenever we go out on these, the support that these other agencies give us with their expertise, their equipment, and personnel is, it's hard to even put into words.
I don't think people realize that the ATF or the Secret Service would be involved in these kinds of things. I don't think they go past what, they see on the media about what their roles and responsibilities are. But they're really, as you know, they're also involved in narcotics enforcement, that we work with them every day as well and have agents from the ATF on our task force. So is that true, too, where you work, Sergeant Free? I mean, do you work closely with these people?
Yeah, absolutely. We work hand in glove with them. As a matter of fact, over the past 3 years, we were involved in an enhanced collaborative model human trafficking grant, and that included the FBI, Homeland Security investigations, and another local victim service providers. And so that grant just ended. But, you know, one of the real things is, you know, a local agency is responsible for putting out the fire of the moment on that street level. Somebody picks up on the phone, they call 911, and they expect the local police to come deal with the emergency of the moment. But a lot of times there's a lot of layers underneath that initial call, and that's where these more specialized units come into play. When the excitement dies down, there's still this investigation left to conduct, and that's where we really work with our federal partners, because you know the federal agencies bring money to the table that we don't have, and it gives us the ability to engage in long-term focused investigations in a narrow area. If it was just the local PD, we would constantly be forced to put out the emergency of the moment, and having our federal partners allows us to really take our time and dig into things. They bring a budget and a jurisdictional reach that we just do not have. It's not something that we can choose to do here. We just don't have it.
So that's interesting. You know, you mentioned you're involved in human trafficking investigations. I think a lot of people look at human trafficking in terms of labor trafficking or migrant trafficking, those kinds of things. But specifically, I know most of your work has been centered around sex trafficking. And I think we, as a community, we had our head in the sand about that for many, many years. You know, I like to talk about that specifically because it used to be there were areas of the city where we had prostitution on the streets. Everyone looked at the prostitutes, and you know, of course, Pretty Woman, the movie with Richard Gere, was just it's glamorized this absolutely horrible sex trade that's just victimizes so many people. So maybe people didn't take it seriously, but they disappeared from the streets. And I remember people literally saying, "Boy, you guys did a good job cleaning it up, but there's no one on the streets anymore. I guess prostitution is over with, and there are no more victims being created." And of course, for a couple of years, I mean, there were people in all police departments who sort of believed that. And then we found out, in fact, that women are being trafficked and children are being trafficked for sex on using the internet and using those kinds of tools. And you work with the feds in dealing with those kinds of issues.
Yeah, and that's actually our bread and butter of investigations is human trafficking. The thing is, a lot of people don't really understand human trafficking, particularly sex trafficking, and they have a little bit of trouble differentiating it from actual acts of prostitution. You know, specifically human trafficking gets into commercial sex, where somebody is forced to engage in commercial sex and through force, fraud, or coercion of another person. It's not just them deciding to engage in it. It's a third party that's profiting from their labor and, like I said, using force, fraud, and coercion. And on its surface, this seems very simple, but a lot of times when women are it's not just women, people, but just for the ease of communication, when women are engaged in prostitution, they don't see how they're being victimized. So these investigations can actually be tough in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I know the wraparound support that we were able to put together for victims of this largely came from federal funding. And, you know, I was going to try to avoid the whole talk about federal grants and federal funding and all that, because this would certainly eliminate all of that. But I think to some people that may not understand the social impact of some of these crimes and criminal activity, I think maybe the money does matter. And so I know that in my task force, literally millions of dollars would have to be added to our budget to be able to maintain the level of effort we have. And when I say that, I mean, it's, several million dollars would be required to replace if we could. And it would take 20 years to replace the effort that comes forward from experienced law enforcement agents from the DEA, ATF, HSI, and other places that work narcotics. And I'm sure that's true in all of our disciplines. And I know that we're coming up on a break, but I have to say, when we come back, Sergeant Spronkin, what I'm interested in is not just the stuff you deal with, but the stuff that's around you where you work. And I look at the firearms investigations that we do and the cooperation with NIBIN and those kinds of databases. And, you know, I'm hoping that when we come back, you can talk a little bit about CODIS and NIBIN and all these things, the alphabet soup of federal law enforcement that actually makes us much more efficient and effective and safer than we ever could be on our own. I mean, you can't run a national database as a local agency. It has to be a federal effort, and those kinds of databases are just expected. So when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about that. Well, welcome back. I'm John Levitt again from the Counter Narcotics Alliance, and I'm standing in for Sherry, who's out today to give us the hour to be able to talk about this voter initiative that may end up on the ballot. I believe it's either going to be next week is the filing deadline for the petitions, and I understand from everybody that it's likely to end up on our ballot for people's consideration. Again, we're not taking a position for or against, but it does raise the question, and what would we do without our ability to work with our federal law enforcement partners? And the three of us in here today, Sergeant Spronkin, Sergeant Free, and myself, work every day with federal partners. There's many other people in the police department who do. But we're in a position to be able to discuss some of that. We'd love to have you join the conversation. Just call 790-2040 if you'd like to join, about your thoughts about this initiative and Tucson Families Free and Together, and what you think about how it expands into the areas to prevent virtually any interaction between the federal law enforcement agencies and local law enforcement agencies. So, Sergeant Spronkin, tell me a little bit about the databases and the kinds of things that you guys use that might be affected.
Well, one that I would think would make a major impact that I can think of is NCMEC, which is the National Center for Endangered and Missing Children. They're based out of the East Coast. And to begin with, all our cyber tips. So that's all the things that have to related with child pornography, images of sexual exploitation of a minor. These mega companies that are internet related, i.e. Google, Apple, when they come across something like this, they mandatorily have to report. And we get all that information. And if it comes locally to us, it needs to come to us. And TPD, we will filter that, and then we will do our measures to figure out if it truly is in our jurisdiction. And if it is, that's how we combat it. So, and we are getting this all the time. This is an overwhelming problem that a lot of people, unless you kind of really are in this world, a lot of people aren't aware of not only the amount of it, but just how truly dangerous and nasty this really is. I think a lot of people have an idea of what it is, but unless you've actually had the unfortunate experience of having to observe this, you don't even realize what it is. So without that tool, we would not be getting these tips, and we certainly wouldn't be able to combat it in any shape and form the way we are right now. Furthermore, if we do have a true abduction, they are immediately on the case. They have an incredible amount of a war chest for money, resources, people. And you know, most people outside of law enforcement probably know just through like movies and stuff, but that first like 24 hours, that first 2 hours, if you have a true child that's missing or abducted, is critical. And the ability to have the resources, money, equipment and personnel that NCMEC can provide on something like that critical is almost unquantifiable. So in my mission, what I'm doing, the ability to not work with them would be disastrous.
So really, when you say disastrous, what it would mean is that children would be endangered here and elsewhere. I mean, this would put children in real danger if we're unable to work with our federal partners.
Absolutely, no doubt.
You know, and what you just said makes me reflect upon Joint Terrorism Task Force. That's another group that we're a part of, and we do it in concert with other state and local agencies, working with the FBI and other federal agencies to make sure that we're safe from domestic terror threats as well as international terror threats. And I think sometimes people who are not immersed in this every day think that, well, that happened on 9/11, and well, not since. Well, I'll say it's true. We've been very safe since 9/11, and I do have to say that that's because of the work of people in the Joint Terrorism Task Force. They prosecute cases every year. We've prosecuted cases locally that the Tucson Police Department's been involved in. We don't specifically talk about the kinds of cases that we do, but I can tell you that in the cases that I was involved with as a commander, I can say that if the city of Tucson had to bear that alone, there would literally have been millions of dollars of expenses that were picked up by the federal government. Suppose you got a threat about somebody, and everyone likes to say, well, are they on your radar? Did you connect the dots? All these, you know, these things they say. Well, okay, so we connect the dots, they're on our radar, then what do you want us to do with them? So if we don't have enough to arrest them because they haven't yet broken the law, but they appear to be putting together a conspiracy to harm people and large numbers of people or any number of people, then we have to do things like surveillances. And to do a surveillance it's not like you see in the movies. It's not, you know, one guy sitting in a car smoking and drinking coffee. There's whole squads. There's all sorts of assets that go into place to do a surveillance that cost them. You're going to surveil a single person over the course of a year because you think that they're a terror threat. It's well over $1 million, $2 million often, to do the single person over the course of a year. So I like the thought that everyone thinks that they've got 700 people in the United States that we should be surveilling. Nobody has the resources to be able to do that. And so without our federal partners, it would literally bankrupt the city of Tucson or any city our size or any city to be able to do the kinds of things that we can do because we're part of the task force. And so that leads me, and I know that, Sergeant Free, you've had some experience also with NIBIN and the firearms unit, they're next door to you there. Tell us what you know about what services they provide and what those relationships do that we might not be able to access or we wouldn't be able to access if this were to come into effect.
Sure. Well, NIBIN is supervised by one of our sister units, Sergeant Curlin. And essentially what NIBIN is NIBIN is software and technicians that are able to analyze tool marks on spent shell casings. So every time that the police and their work come across spent shell casings, whether it's at the scene of a shooting where somebody was shot or whether it's just shots heard in the area or shots fired call or whatever the case may be, those shell casings are collected and they're run through NIBIN and analyzed. And this is really one of the few CSI type cool things, Hollywood type things that the department does have. And we have that because of funding through the ATF. Now, this computer is able to catalog and recall these specific shell case tool markings on these shell cases. And at the same time, when the department has firearms pass through its workflow processes, whether, you know, they come into our possession through various means, they're test fired and those shell casings are also analyzed. And you would be surprised with the frequency where we connect a crime gun to a specific crime, or if we don't have the gun, we're able to link specific crime scenes through the shells that were left at those scenes.
Yeah, so my experience in working with NIBIN and those folks that work in the firearms forensics units has been, you know, people, again, it's like a fingerprint. I imagine like fingerprints putting shell casings at various scenes, and it'll link scenes. And so There'll be scenes where firearms are used that don't result in anyone being hurt, but there's information about a vehicle that left or a partial plate or the description of somebody. And it'll link it to a scene where all you have is a firearms forensics there, and you're able to put the two and two together. We have solved homicides, several, based upon our ability to do this and use this database. And, you know, we are a leader in the country. ATF will tell you we are one of the most active NIBIN sites in the country. There are a lot of cases that we're involved with, and a lot of our weapons go in. Our department has really invested in this technology and this relationship, and it's made us much safer. And so, again, I mean, I know that we actually co-locate with some of those federal partners to be able to work together on these cases, and I just don't know what it would mean if we couldn't. Well, I do know what it would mean. It would be a disaster. It would really make us less safe.
Well, to say specifically, we would be unable to continue using that technology because the city can't afford it. You know, we have to maintain these relationships if we want access to things that we can't afford on our own. And taking a position where we can't engage in that kind of activity will mean ultimately the public here is less served.
Yeah, no, I'm not sure that people who read the title of this, Tucson Families Freeing Together, will make that connection. You know, there's some evidence that less than 1% of Americans have read the Mueller report that the special counsel asked everybody to read twice. And, you know, I think the problem is people don't read past the headline. And I'm a member of local groups and on various boards, and I've listened to the chatter about this. And I hear them say, well, of course, you know, we don't want to separate families. And I don't either. I absolutely don't want to do that at all. But that really is something that could have been confined to the language of this particular initiative. And my issue is it goes much further than that. People don't read further, but it goes much further. And I'm not saying vote for it or vote against it, but at least know what you're reading. And it's, you know, likely to end up on the ballot. And when it ends up on the ballot, read the entire initiative and decide whether or not you really want to give up all the resources, the people resources that, you know, go beyond the money, the expertise that comes, the folks that come, you know, the federal law enforcement agencies pay very well, and they get some top-notch, very smart people that really help us with a lot of our cases. And I know there's always a, you know, competitive push and pull. There certainly is in narcotics between local and federal law enforcement agencies. But I have to tell you, they have the human resources they are able to provide is just unmatched by any other, you know, long-term dependable source. So I know the child sex issues, for sure, we know that's going to affect us. We'll go back to our days in patrol as a patrol cop. What's the first thing you do when you pick up your radio when you stop someone who looks suspicious that you run into on a traffic stop?
You do a records check.
You do a records check, and that's done through the radio, but it hooks up to a nationwide computer database called NCIC, and that's what tells us whether or not we have a serial murderer who we've just stopped on a traffic stop. Everyone likes to think that a lot of the arrests we make are based on great detective work, where people end up, I mean, in finding them and fugitives and things like that. But the truth is, you know, it's often a traffic stop that leads to the apprehension of the most dangerous people. I mean, the Oklahoma City bomber, he's had a lot of problem with his license plate, got stalked by the Oklahoma State Highway Patrol, I believe. And that's how he was captured. And so we have this database that checks the national database for very dangerous people every time we make a traffic stop, every time we have an encounter. And if that were to go away, I mean, there's just no substitute for that. There's no way to go to a statewide system that would do that. ACIC, the Arizona system, would tell us about Arizona. But, you know, we have these things called freeways, and I-10 comes right through the middle of Tucson, and with I-10 comes a lot of criminals. They come across the country. It's not just the dope business, which, of course, I'm involved with, but it's just fugitives. And, you know, when we come back after the break, the United States Marshal Service has been here. They're the oldest law enforcement agency in southern Arizona. They've been out here keeping us safe since before we were a state, since the Gadsden Purchase. And those guys are absolutely invaluable. I mean, we do a lot of really good police work to put together cases, get warrants for people, and then we simply can't find them. We don't have the resources. We don't have the people. We don't have the outreach. We don't have the ability to travel like they do. And when we give, you know, Marshal Gonzalez a call in Arizona, David Gonzalez, who's a former highway patrolman here, and we give him a call, they drop everything and they help us. And it's not just with the fugitives, but they help us with anything. I mean, they're just an amazingly helpful law enforcement agency that fills the gap. And so when we get back, we'll talk a little bit about what kinds of cases we involve them in. It's been an interesting call so far, but try to call us at 790-2040 and join the conversation and tell us about how you feel about Tucson Families Free and Together and what it would do to local law enforcement and federal law enforcement cooperation. Welcome back. Welcome back. We're here again. I'm John Levitt with the Counter-Narcotics Alliance, the Tucson Police Department, and I'm talking with Sergeant Spronken and Sergeant Free, and we're talking about the effects of potential effects of Tucson Families Free and Together were it to be voted for in the general election this year. It's, of course, got a lot of language deep into the petition that I'm not sure most people would read, and we want to give you the opportunity to know that it would definitely hinder our ability to work with federal law enforcement agencies in ways that I don't know if people would imagine. And I think part of that reason is because people don't realize the depth of the relationships that we have, what we accomplish working together. And so let's go forward. I know, Sergeant Free, we were talking a little bit on the break about some of the human trafficking implications and some of the requirements that are written into the language that are not plain language, that are hard to understand, but might interfere with our ability to do these sex trafficking investigations that we do.
Yeah. Well, a lot of what the initiative talks about is what officers can and cannot talk about on a traffic stop, which is kind of it's a very unnatural situation to get into, especially, particularly there's language that says when the police contact individuals, there's a whole list of things they can't ask about. But having a normal conversation with somebody, whether they've been detained and Mirandized or whether it's consensual, figuring out the backstory, that's what police work is. So it's contextualizing the contact. So there's specific language in there that basically says, hey, you're not allowed to contextualize what you're talking about if it's within these specific things. And then it goes on to say, unless it's about human trafficking. Well, you don't just go from, you know, 1 to 10. There's a process by which you figure out it's human trafficking. I already alluded to earlier, a lot of people have trouble understanding what human trafficking is. You know, they can't mentally separate it from the actual prostitution. And it's a very complex conversation that gets you from point A to point B that a lot of people don't know. And as you go on, it's basically saying, oh, yeah, it's fine to talk about human trafficking. Oh, and additionally, if you're going to apply for U or T visas, there's a certain speed deadline which that application needs to be processed by TPD. You know, that's all fine and dandy, but they need to understand that ultimately the actual U or T visa is a federal process. You know, Tucson PD does not issue visas of any kind. And ultimately we're relying on our relationship with our federal partners to articulate why the Tucson Police Department would need a crime victim to have status so that they can stay here to cooperate with our investigation. So it kind of goes both ways.
You know, that's the first time I've really heard that discussion or that thought, and it is true. It would really affect our ability to assist people in getting UNT visas because of our lack of cooperation then with the federal law enforcement. Again, these are relationship-based things, and if we have no relationship, I just don't know how you pop up out of nowhere and suddenly grant someone a U or T visa, something that's very valuable to us often. And it's just, to me, that's something that I hadn't considered. And hopefully the listeners will look a little deeper into this and understand it. Sergeant Spronken, I know we talked a minute about travelers, and talk about what a traveler is and how that's affected by all this.
Yeah, well, I'd just like to chime in on the relationship part, too. You know, recently we've been really making a lot of arrests, and I think a big impact in the city of Tucson, specifically about the sexual exploitation of the minors. And kind of word has gotten out amongst our brothers and sisters and our federal agencies that are local to Tucson, and they want to get involved. I think this is a crime that everyone can get behind. They want to protect our children. They want to, their children are in this community. And the reason this has started is because we're in different investigations with them, and we did, you know, had a baseline of a relationship with them. And if we're not going to be able to participate with these other agencies in the future, then we can't make that impact. And you know, just the idea of not having a relationship with these other agencies for whatever could happen in the future, it'd be very, very significant and kind of scary when I think about it. As far as the traveler operations, what that is, you know, as we all know, kids are on the internet, and there's predators out there who are trying to lure these children who are either on their Facebook account, Instagram, whatever their messenger service is, and these predators are either being straightforward about who they are or pretending to be somebody else. However, they are luring these kids to do outlandish things. Recently, we had someone in Pima County who had basically lured a 11-year-old girl from Florida and to come all the way out to Tucson. And I won't go into the details because it's pretty disgusting about what the plan was. And fortunately, we were able to intercept the juvenile before she got here. But obviously, this is relating to Florida and Arizona, and this is not simply something that Tucson Police Department could take on. And if it wasn't for the FBI and other federal agencies getting involved and being able to intercept this child prior to her going, landing in Tucson, this would be impossible. And God only knows what was going to happen with that. We've definitely had travel operations where the suspect has shown up with duct tape and a gun and all sorts of other things. So it could be, we get caught up on just the sexual part about this, but we never really consider what the ultimate plan, and it really goes down a very dark rabbit hole. So this is something we take very, very seriously. It's happening all the time. These predators have a force multiplier with the internet. And without the federal support to help us and guide us with a lot of this forensic and analytical support, we are going to get so far behind, and it really, really puts our children in danger.
So I've been paying attention to the work that your people have done in that regard, and it's just spectacular. And it is always in concert with federal law enforcement agencies. We have a caller on the line, Chris. Chris, what's your question? What's your comment?
Hey, good morning there, and I've been on hold since the last segment, and I figured since Captain Levitt's talking so much, we better break this up with a good call. So my question's on guns. So let's say I'm someone with mental health issues, and otherwise I have no criminal history, or I haven't popped up in the criminal justice system at all, and I'm not a prohibited possessor by any means. But I go out and I start buying a bunch of guns legally, and I start generating a lot of these ATF 4473 forms, and our federal partner, the ATF, catches it and goes, hey, this guy's buying a lot of guns. Maybe we need to pass it on to Tucson Police, since it's in their jurisdiction, to go talk to him, see what's going on. Perhaps this is a person that could be another Jared Lochner in waiting, could be planning something. But they pass that information on to TPD to go out and intervene or to talk to this person. And because of this initiative, let's say it passed, would that mean that TPD would be prohibited from going out and potentially identifying someone with serious mental health issues and getting them the help they need and potentially down the line saving the community from further gun violence when guns fall into the hands of people that really shouldn't have them?
I think it's a very interesting point, Chris. And I would say, just from my experience, it would prevent TPD from doing any kind of investigative work to see whether or not a threat exists in that circumstance, because we simply wouldn't know about it. I mean, Sergeant Free, what would your experience tell you?
Well, you know, certainly if that information did come into our hand, into Tucson PD's hands, we would follow up on it in some matter, but it goes back to that relationship talk that we were talking about earlier. You know, we have situations where we're co-located with the ATF, and we can kind of seamlessly bring all that information together, get some background to it, and act, you know, conduct analysis on the person and figure out, hey, is this guy just a normal as conducting business, or is he somebody that we need to look at from a mental health angle? So I certainly think anything that adds friction to that is going to be a problem, and this initiative does add friction to that, because it essentially says to every single federal partner, hey, if you want to interact with Tucson PD, then you need to come up and sign this special set of circumstances governing how you act. Well, I've heard estimates that there's up to 18,000 separate individual law enforcement agencies in America. And it's just not rational to think that a federal agency is going to have a super duper special individual legal relationship with every single one of those police agencies. It's not a rational expectation. And so as a result, what you're going to have is these federal agencies just say, fine, we don't interact with you guys. You know, we have our protocols, but we are not in a position to come up with that many legal agreements on an individual basis. So,
yeah, and I know our relationship with ATF is better than it ever has been. And, you know, ATF went through some struggles a few years ago, and their bounce back has been to really double down on their investment in the Tucson community to make sure that they're available to help us with a wide range of issues. And I can tell you that in narcotics, they're part of our task force, and we are able, you know, we seize a huge number of firearms that are used for nefarious purposes that are not used for sporting purposes or even home protection. They're offensive firearms that are used to carry out the drug trade, and their ability to provide us with information and their ability to follow up on cases is just enormous. Can't imagine what we would do there. You know, the other thing I want to talk about in our last segment when we get back, we're got a couple minutes before the break, but you know, just in a build up for that. Tucson is the center. The Tucson sector of the Border Patrol, actually, for the last decade, has had more narcotics smuggled through it and seized than any other sector in the American border. So, and frankly, more than all other sectors combined. 51% of the narcotics seized in the United States over the last 10, 15, and 20 years has been in the Tucson sector of the Border Patrol, which is, you know, not the whole Arizona border, but it comes up through Tucson. And so we're in the middle of all of that. We're in the middle of the narcotics trafficking corridor, the biggest narcotics trafficking corridor by far. And yet, you know, we have a relatively corruption-free environment to work in as law enforcement officers. I mean, I can think over my 37 years here, and we've had a handful of cases in 37 years where police officers have worked, even more than one police officer's worked to do anything that is illegal or corrupt. And I'll take it past police officers, because police officers are only one measure. But prosecutors, I mean, we don't have corrupt prosecutors. Judges, we don't have corrupt judges. We don't have any of that. And I think our experience, maybe when we come back, we can talk about why that is. But I will tell you right now that there's no question in my mind in the narcotics world where corruption is most often found, like in South Florida back in the 80s, you know, movies about these things in New York and Los Angeles and all these places, that corruption, I don't know how it would happen. We've got a squad with four different agencies in it, with four different cultures, with four different reporting sets of rules on reporting misconduct. I mean, I just don't know how you could engage in corruption when you have the kind of diversity of law enforcement agencies we have at state, federal, local, you know, county. To me, it's like, it's almost impossible. I think that's one of the reasons we've done so well, is we've always worked well with our federal partners. And the other part of that question maybe we can talk about a little bit is, you know, we were cops. We've been around of training and been around the country even on cases. And you always hear people complain about this or that with the feds. And I just have never had those problems here. I don't get it, and it may be because of our long history with federal law enforcement when we were a territory and then became a state. And but our relationship has been so cooperative over the course of my almost four decades in law enforcement here that it's not the national narrative, and we are so lucky. And I would sure hate to do anything to affect what it is that's created essentially a corruption-free environment for law enforcement in the courts. You know, I'm not smart enough maybe to figure out what causes that to be the case, but just compare us to any of the other areas and jurisdictions I've talked to you about. We're certainly different. So after the break, maybe we'll give that a little consideration. Welcome back. It's John Levitt here in for Sherry, and I'm here with Sergeant Spronken and Sergeant Free, and we're talking about what it would be like to try to work law enforcement or provide a safe community in an environment where we couldn't participate with our federal partners. Very different landscape. We've talked about it a lot. Sounds like there'd be more child sex trafficking. Sounds like a child molestation would be a greater threat to the safety than it already is, and it's, you know, epidemic. And so I know in the narcotics world it would just change and shake everything upside down in ways that you couldn't imagine during the biggest single health threat of opioids in maybe my lifetime. And I know in when it comes to gun crimes, we'd have an inability to work gun crimes to the degree that we're able to. And the last thing I brought up, and there's, of course, a thousand other things, the terrorism task force and being able to use CODIS to be able to look at the database for DNA to be able to solve homicides and rapes. That would be a problem. And working with the Secret Service, who do not just presidential protection, although that would be an issue if we had visits. It's also the kind of work that they do when it comes to credit card fraud and those financial crimes that they help with. It's something as small as the Capitol Police comes out here to provide protection for our congresspeople. And don't you know we need that sometimes? I mean, we certainly have learned that lesson. And so we wouldn't have that kind of support, wouldn't have relationships with those folks. But also the federal prisons. You know, we have some huge federal prisons here in Southern Arizona in the city limits of Tucson. And our ability to work with the Federal Correctional Institute to be able to provide a safe environment should there be an escape or a problem there and those kinds of things, being able to work with them would be compromised. So in addition to all of that and the concerns that brings, I go back to the corruption issue. I don't have the answer for why it is that we've lived in a pretty corruption-free environment our entire lives here. But what are your thoughts? Sergeant Free, you've been around for a while. What do you think?
Well, you know, ultimately, I think one of the biggest things is that our pay in the area is competitive, you know, and yeah, an officer can choose to be an officer for the most part in any jurisdiction, state, local, or federal that they want. And, you know, the fact that our pay is competitive and that, you know, it just makes corruption not a good career path. And, but also, when you're working on a task force, there has to be transparency in order to have a productive relationship. That means you're not in a position to hide things from, you know, other investigators. You're not in a position to hide things from an assistant U.S. attorney. So having the books open is just one more check on people to say, you know, it's just not worth jeopardizing anything
Certainly, you're right. It's the highest risk areas for corruption was where we have those task forces. It's where we work together with all these different agencies, and I think that's a big player. You know, any time in a narcotics investigation, it touches on potential public corruption. First call we make is to the FBI's anti-corruption squad. We give them a call, and we've got Tucson police officers that work with them, and we just turn it over to them. And we, in narcotics, because of the undercover nature of what we do, we run into a lot of those kinds of things. It turned out to be nothing in the end, but we don't for a second sit on them. They go straight, they get investigated right away, and it's a tremendous resource. So, Sergeant Spronkin, what's your experience been in that arena?
I agree with Ben. We do have good competitive pay here, and it doesn't put us in a position where we have to do unethical things to put, you know, food on the table for our families. But you're right. I mean, especially when we're dealing with these task force, we're taking on big investigations. And the more eyes on it makes it less likely to do shady things. And especially when you don't know everyone and you're building these relationships, and it really just keeps things on the up and up. And I think, you know, like Ben, for example, he's a Marine. You know, I'm an Army veteran. And, you know, we may like kind of clown on each other for those branches of the military we're in, but at the end of the day, we really respect each other for the service, just like we really respect our federal partners in the FBI, the ATF, or whatever it is. And usually any of that talk is mostly just in jest. At the end of the day, I think we found that all these folks that we've worked with are all in this for the right reasons. We want to make a positive impact on our communities and, you know, make our community members safer, because that's where we live as well. And I certainly have not seen anything in over a decade of law enforcement experience that has concerned me in any way when it comes to corruption, and I don't expect to see that for the rest of my career.
Well, very good. I think, you know, as we're in the last couple of minutes of the show, but I think probably as this all pertains, this discussion all pertains to this particular initiative. Again, I mean, Tucson Families Free Together, who would guess that would mean that we would disrupt our ability to work with victims of child molestation, of sex trafficking, people involved in the narcotics trade, be able to undermine our efforts to stem gun crime. Who would guess that would all be behind the scenes in this? And, you know, whether or not that was by accident or deliberate, The truth is, it's not about Tucson families freeing together. There's a lot more to this. And I won't say which way to vote again, but I do think you need to read it. And I think you need to read it and talk about it. And I think the media needs to talk about it, the larger media. And I think they need to get to the bottom. Sometimes, you know, when you see stories reported, they do a this side and that side, like there's two sides to every issue. And I'm sure they'll find someone that will say that what we're saying isn't true, but I can tell you that's absolutely true. There's people a lot smarter than we are that have taken a look at this, that see the implications for our relationships with the federal government, and they know what this means. And I think there's been some real legal analysis done that shows that. This wasn't done, I mean, in my view, there's some very smart people, very intelligent people, we'll put it, that were involved in creating this initiative. And this stuff here that we're talking about, I don't think it's inadvertent, and my concern is the chaos that it would bring to our ability to work and provide safety, I mean, at all levels. And again, I'll go right down to what have we talked about so far, our ability to work with, you know, the fingerprint database, the DNA database, be able to look at the records that show felony warrants, work with a joint terrorism task force, work with a firearms database, work with the Secret Service, the Capitol Police, using the U.S. Marshals for fugitive support to go out and catch these fugitives when we finally get the warrant to put the grabola on them. How do we do that when they escape to Montana? I mean, it's something that local law enforcement's just not very good at. And so all of those things, our work with the FBI, the DEA, the Homeland Security investigators, ATF, the National Guard, and their work with us. There's probably another 20 or 30 agencies. So, I mean, you know, if you're in 10 seconds, Ben, what would you say about the effect that this will have on our ability to make the community safe?
You know, I think it's going to have a big effect. The initiative plays on a lot of fears that ultimately have no basis in reality for work on the Tucson police, and it's going to affect really important operations.
I think so, too. And Sergeant Spronk, on your thoughts?
The inability to do NCIC, ACIC would have an absolute sudden effect of just we would not know who we were dealing with. Could have a potential horrific outcome. And then just the ability to do any sort of complex investigation would be nearly impossible.
I think, you know, you think about it, they used to call us the Wild West. Well, even in the Wild West, we had United States Marshals that helped keep us safe. And so this would be a step beyond into total chaos and anarchy. I mean, really, in a lot of ways, our abilities would be so severely impacted by this that we would be a different place. We'd be a different community, and maybe we wouldn't have the level of efficacy in law enforcement that we do today. It's a very concerning thing, and again, make your own decision about how you want to vote. Just take the time to read it. It's going to affect your children's lives. It's going to affect everybody in the community, and we're about out of time, but as Sherry would say, shop local, and we'll hear from you next week.